want you to know we really do appreciate it. And the open forum tonight was very impressive. And this is a good congregation. We have a wonderful eldership and a good group of deacons, and they are doing things just exactly like they ought to be done according to the teaching of the New Testament. I think it's a privilege to be a member of a congregation that is doing the great work that you're doing and doing it the way you're doing it, according to the pattern that's been set before us. According to the best knowledge that I have, and I've checked with several people about this who have usually kept up with the history of the church in Atlanta, and the best date that I could get for the establishment of the church is 1906, 7 or 8, one of those 3 years there. Now, one brother told me, who has been following the history of the church for some time, that he believes it's 1906, and he doesn't believe he'd miss that more than a year or so. Whoever put it right in that area of 1906 through 1909, at that time there was not a Church of the Lord's People in Atlanta. And in the notes that Scott has in his outline, you'll notice in there that he mentioned the demise of the church. It first went into apostasy and then finally disappeared. And so when Brother O.D. Bearden moved from Nashville, Tennessee to Atlanta, he was the only family of members of the church. There was no Church of the Lord in Atlanta. He was a cabinet maker, and he established a cabinet shop on Trinity Avenue, just on the outskirts of downtown Atlanta. And he began to conduct services in his home, and that continued for a while. And he began to have people who obeyed the gospel. And the time came when he thought he needed to have a full-time preacher. So he contacted some people in Nashville, asked them to send a preacher to Atlanta to work for the church full-time. And they sent Brother S.H. Hall. Brother S.H. Hall moved to Atlanta about 1911, I believe it was. And he got things going in a good way. And the church at West End became a real evangelistic church. They began to reach out into different areas to teach the gospel and hold different meetings. Hall helped a tent meeting in East Point in 1911. And it lasted 6 weeks. It's something that doesn't happen anymore, does it? We used to have meetings that lasted 2 and 3 weeks. 6 weeks. I've never experienced one that lasted that long. But in those days, you know, they didn't have what we have today, television and movies and things like that. And the people enjoyed having a place to go and to hear the gospel preached. And a lot of them became Christians because of that fact. Well, that meeting continued for 6 weeks, as we said, and at the close of it, there were 150 had been added to the church. Some were already Christians and were worshiping the West End and lived out in that area, and the rest of them were Baptists of the East Point Church. And the church at West End continued to reach out into the different areas of Atlanta to hold tent meetings, and as a result of that, many people were baptized into Christ. Brother Hall was able to raise enough support to build a building. The property was bought on the corner of Western Avenue and Wellman Street. And a building was built, and that was the first meeting at the West End Church, the first meeting house the West End Church had. And as a result of the efforts they were making, they established other churches around in the area. But during this period of time, when after the West End building was built, parents became members of the church. The Brother Wayne Nash, in his Sunday morning class, is emphasizing, he calls it the hand of God in the affairs of people. In other words, the providence of God. He told me that, and I said, that's my favorite subject. I like to study that. And this is something that happened as a providence of God. I know that when somebody is earnestly seeking the truth, God will see that they find a way to hear it and an opportunity to believe and obey it. My dad was in the grocery business. And in those days, they had to go out in the morning and take and then fill orders and go back to the store and fill orders and then deliver. Well, on his ride, he had a lady who kept inviting him to go to the Baptist church with her. She invited him to the services. Well, now, he had an experience with that. His people were Baptist, and he was not anything because he had been reading the Bible all his life. And one time, a person in that area, well, he lived over in Campbell County. There's no such county now. It's now South Fulton. There used to be Campbell County. And at the time, a member of the Christian church died, and he and his brother attended a funeral. Well, that preacher just simply preached a gospel sermon. And he taught the plan of salvation. And so when my dad and his mother got back home, he said, "Mother, why don't y'all teach the scriptures like that man did today and like the Bible teaches it? Baptism for remission of sins." She saw using just an old Carmelite. He didn't even know what a Carmelite was. He had never heard of it. But anyway, he never went back to another church. But as a result of this lady's invitation, he decided he'd go. And in those days, you know, the meat boxes, the big meat boxes were cooled with ice. That's no such thing as electric cooling in those days. So he had to go by the store on Sunday morning and into the drain pans. Well, something happened. I don't remember what it was, but he was delayed. And he looked at his clock and he saw that he didn't have time to get to that Baptist church after he had finished his work. So he started back home. He came by the church there on the Western Avenue and Wellington Street. He said, "Well, I intended to go to church, and I'm dressed for it, so I believe I'll go in and see what this is." Well, as soon as he got in there and Brother Hall started preaching, he knew he had found what he'd been looking for all his life. And Brother Hall announced a tent meeting the next night, beginning on Monday night, over in the Glen Street area of Atlanta. And my dad went, and on Monday night he went back again Tuesday night, and at the end of the service he answered the invitation, was baptized in Christ. So could see the providence of God in that. A man who had been searching for the truth, and God finally saw that he had an opportunity here, and I believe it, and obeyed. Then Brother Hall, the work continued, and the church was established over on South Pryor, called the South Pryor Street Church of Christ. Well, that lasted for a few years, and then they relocated to Boland Avenue. And of course, the church still exists on Boland Avenue. Had several preachers that worked with him. One of the most notable was W.W. McPherson. And I guess he preached for that church for about 30 years, or maybe longer than that. There was one interruption there during his time of preaching there. He moved to Valdosta and became the president of the, what it was called at that time. It's not the same name that they used then for it. But it was the school that was there, and it was called Asher Bible School. Well, he became the president of that. But that didn't last about 2 years, and he moved back to Warren Avenue and continued there until he retired from preaching and moved to Conyers. And you know, Brother McPherson died just a few years ago. But the work continued, but Brother Hall left the West End in 1919, and Brother B.C. Goodpaster moved there in 1920. And as a result of his work, the church continued to grow there, and he remained there until 1927. Before he left, he held a meeting, and 104 people were baptized in that meeting. Many of them, about 50 I think it was, came from the Christian church. They have renounced that and became members of the Lord's church. The rest of them were baptisms. Brother Goodpaster moved to Florence, Alabama, and in a year's time, the West End was holding more meetings in the Pastor Lynn area, northeast area over there. And they had enough people had obeyed the gospel to want establishing a church there. Well, they contacted Brother Goodpaster. He came and worked with 701 Avenue until he became the editor of the Gospel Advocate. A short time after that, you know, they moved to Pastor Lynn Avenue and was known as the Druid Hills Church. I don't believe that church is in existence any longer. But then, Brother Hale had come to West End in the meantime. He moved to West End in 1927. And he began to launch out into the area with meetings. And in those days, they called them cottage meetings. They'd meet in the home, you know, and have a Bible study. And that was done almost every night during the week. And of course, people again were baptized, added to the Lord's church. And the things began to grow and spread, and so there's a need for another church building to be built. The small building there on Western Avenue was getting too crowded. Now, this was in the Depression now. And Brother Hale was able to accomplish that task. They purchased a piece of property on the corner of Gordon Street and Hopkins, Gordon and Hopkins Street. And that's where the church is still in existence. They have built a new building, too, now. But that building was built in the midst of the Depression, the Great Depression. Some of you have never experienced that. But it was really one of the hardest things to get through for people that I had ever experienced. I was pretty young at that time, but I do remember it. And build a new church building, buy a piece of property, and that location, it was not quite a task. But he was able to accomplish that. And then the work continued to grow, and finally, Brother Hale was instrumental in getting Brother Kebo to come to Atlanta for a meeting. This was a most notable meeting. He had convinced the elders at West End to have Brother Kebo to come. At that time, the beginning of this meeting, there was not a single black person who was a member of the Lord's Church in Atlanta. Not a single one. So they saw the need for that, and they got busy, and they had arranged a meeting with Brother Kebo in advance. It had to be done because he was such a busy person that he had a pretty full schedule all the time. But they obtained a lot on Ashby Street, one of the nicest black neighborhoods in West End. And they erected a tent, and it was all ready for me. Brother Kebo arrived, Brother Hale got him in his car and took him over there and showed him that piece of property. Brother Hale was so proud of that, because it wasn't such a good location he thought. Well, he asked Brother Kebo, says, "There, how you like it?" Well, Brother Kebo said, "You've got the tent in the wrong place." And he said, "I just as well have shot Hale." He said, "He was up until I made that statement. He's up in the air." But he said, "Well, I'll take you over to the city and we'll see if we can't find another location." Well, Brother Kebo wanted to talk to the elders first. So Brother Hale took him to see one of the elders who was in the wholesale grocery business. He had a large business built up. I think that must have been Brother Harlow. Anyway, they were kind of a little peeved at Brother Kebo because he didn't want to accept the location they had found and had erected a tent on it and all that. But Brother Kebo told me, he said, "Now, I came here not for money, but I came here to save souls. And if I was to open up a wholesale business, I'd come to you for advice." But he said, "Now, all I can do is tell you I know how to preach." And how true that was. He was one of the most notable preachers that you'll ever hear of. And to listen to him, it was no problem to listen to him. You listen to him for 2 or 3 hours without just being tired of that. Well, the tent meeting began and, August 10th, 1931, that meeting began. And the first night or two, there wasn't anybody there much. Only about 20 people came from West End to support the meeting, and some black people, as he said, ambled in. And they were just helping out with the song service, with just a few people were singing. And then the next night after that, there was only a few people more. But the third night, the tent was full. And after that, it was overflowing every night. And people were just coming in droves to attend the meeting. And all of them could not get under the tent. But Brother Kebo had told Brother Hale when he saw that property they'd had where they erected the tent. He said, "You put the tent in the wrong place." He said, "These people will not, we can't get them under the tent." He said, "Now show me where the common people live, the hardworking people in Atlanta live." So he found they located a lot on Simpson Street. And this lot belonged to a Jew. And this Jewish man told him that he would rent them the lot for the meeting for $50. But after he heard Brother Kebo preach a time or two, he wouldn't take a cent for it, he said. He said, you can't take this with you. It'll be here when you leave. So he said, you just use it as long as you need to. Well, the meeting lasted 4 weeks. And the attendance continued to grow. And the first week, the first night of the meeting, in fact, Brother Keeble said there were 40 tough-looking characters who came into the meeting. He said they weren't respectful, they weren't dressed properly. They had on clothes and they didn't have the kind of clothes they could think of to put on, but he said they just had no respect. He said things was pretty rough at that time. Some of the black people's houses had been dynamited, and the Ku Klux Klan got the blame for it. I don't know whether they were guilty or not, but they were blamed for it. And he said these men came ready for anything that would take place. He said they were really ready for a holdout. But he said after the meeting, after he had got through preaching, said they was altogether different. And they came back the next night. He said you wouldn't even know that they were the same people. That they came with their suits on and their collars buttoned up and their ties on. He said they were just altogether different people. He said they attended meetings every single night. That is the effect that he had on people as he preached the gospel. He was one of the most notable preachers and most interesting to listen to. And he was so witty at times. The illustrations that he used and his anecdotes were just priceless. And nobody could say them like he could. Brother S.H. Hall attended that meeting. He'd come to Atlanta, and I think it was about the last week of it. But when the meeting was over, he said, oh, how that man can preach. He said, I had to stand. There wasn't room for him to sit. He said, I had to stand. But he said, I could stand flat-footed for 3 hours and listen to that man without getting tired. And Brother Hale's comment was, that is the most wonderful meeting that he had ever experienced. And there were so many things that were done. Well, came up during the meeting. One thing was the Brother M.A. Hornsby, a member of the West End Church, was also the chief of police at that time in Atlanta. And he was getting some telephone calls that were anonymous, but they were telling him that they needed to kill Keeble and whip Clyde Hale. But such, of course, didn't take place, but that was what they wanted to do. They were trying to close that meeting down. He was doing too much good. Well, about the second week of the meeting, a man came in, a preacher from the Holiness Church. His name was Swanson, called him a bishop, Bishop Swanson. He was carrying a cane, and it was a sword cane. And Brother Luke Miller, he's another notable gospel preacher, black gospel preacher. He was there at that night, and Brother Keeble invited anybody to come up who had anything to say about the way he was preaching the gospel. Well, this gentleman walked up, and Luke Miller arrested that sword from him. He said, I was afraid that Keeble would make him so mad that he'd use that sword on him. And the man said, finally he told him, he said, you know, things were going along pretty well until you came here, and you just stirred up a lot of trouble. Brother Keeble said, well, he didn't really mean any harm. The thing was resolved by Brother Keeble's baptizing him. He baptized him in Christ. You couldn't be around him very long without learning the truth about what you need to do in order to be saved. That happened so many times in his experience as a gospel preacher. And to show you some other effects that he was having on the people in Atlanta in that area, you know, there were streetcars in those days. And the Georgia Power Company, those cars, as they passed by the tent, were causing a lot of noise and interrupting the service. Georgia Power Company issued orders to the motormen to cut off their power when they came back down the hill. They come down the hill past the tent being there. Ordered them to cut off the power and just coast down that hill. All those things, you know, were taking place. It just shows you how much effect he was having on people and the experience that he was having. And how effective his preaching was. But Brother Keeble didn't know about that until after the meeting had closed. And he didn't know about these threats either that was coming to Brother Hornsby about killing him and whipping Brother Hale. But Luke Miller was leading the singing for that meeting. And Brother Keeble said that Luke and his wife and he could sing like mockingbirds. He said that's how it was that they managed to get people into the, they charmed them into the meeting by that great singing that they were doing. But Brother Keeble had so many other experiences. Here's one that, although it's not connected with Atlanta, but it does involve Brother Goodpaster, as he was one of the older preachers in Atlanta at that time. This was in Valdosta. Brother Keeble went there for a meeting and said Brother Goodpaster sat up on the stage with him every night, and he had obtained a stenographer, a court stenographer, to take down the meetings in shorthand, the sermons rather than shorthand. And Brother Keeble didn't much like it at first, but he got used to it. And the lady's hand began to swell. And the reason for it was, Brother Keeble, his language just kept coming without any interruption, which is about different from court proceedings, you know. And she had just used the hand so much trying to keep up with him that the doctor said, well, she just had swell muscles. It was just tired. And she didn't have anything to worry about. It would soon clear up. Which, of course, I guess it did. So the church continued to reach out into different areas and preach the gospel and establish other congregations. In 1934, the Church of the Grange was having some problems. They asked Brother Hale to help them. As a result, he held a three-Sunday tent meeting there, and there were 65 baptized. And the Callaway people that owned a lot of textile mills down there gave the church a large donation, and they were able to build a building. So he was able to get a church organized and established in the Grange. Well, they did have a small one, but it was just not making any progress. But after that, they did put a well on their own. Then in 1933, Brother Hale planned a church in Athens. There was Brother and Sister Crompton. Now, Sister Crompton is an aunt of Wayne and David and Colleen and she is an aunt of all those people. I couldn't call the last one's name. But she was their aunt. Now, Brother Crompton worked for a Georgia Power Company, and they transferred him. He was a member of East Point, all of them. And they transferred him to Athens. We went to church there. So there was another family, the Grays, Billy, I can't think of anything tonight, but anyway, he and his wife, Connie, Billy and Connie Gray, were there. And they began to hold some services in the City Hall. And a few people were added to the church, but Brother Compton contacted the Western Elders and asked him to send Brother Hale there to get the church established. Well, Brother Hale went and he preached a few times in the City Hall. Then he began to hold tent meetings. And as a result of those tent meetings, enough people became members of the church to allow for another congregation to be established. So the church there built a rather bawdy dwelling house and began to meet in that dwelling house. West End continued to help them, sending people over there to preach, and I happened to be one of them. Brother Stroud and I, one of the West End elders, went over there on Sundays for a year or two, I suppose, until they reached a point where they could obtain a full-time preacher. And the first preacher that they had was Adair Chapman, his Forrest brother. So then the time came when they could build a building. They grew to the point they could build a building. There's a good, strong congregation in Athens. I guess some 300 or 400 members now. This is something, too, that I'm about to overlook. This was sent to me by the Olive Street Church. It was Olive Street at that time at Marietta. And this is the history that they give, short, briefly here. The date of the establishment of the church in Marietta is unknown. However, it is known that a small group of Christians built a house in which to worship before the Civil War. The best evidence we have points to 1850, when a meeting house was erected at the intersection of Lower Roswell Road and Little Road. And I remember that well, because we went up there many times to preach. A small cemetery now exists on the north side of the original lot. The building stood for more than 100 years until it was torn down in 1958. This congregation was known as Pleasant Grove Church until they had moved to uptown. And among the preachers who served Pleasant Grove Church, now that's not all these, the noble preachers that was West End, were Jeff Hunton. He lived in Florida, but he had a lot of relatives in Atlanta at that time. Doc Claiborne, Timothy Barfield, Paul Howard, Flavel Hall. Flavel Hall, Brother Nichols named all of his sons after gospel preachers. And his oldest son is named Flavel, Flavel Nichols. He was named after Brother Flavel Hall. Jeff Hunton, Doc Claiborne, Timothy Barfield, Paul Howard, Flavel Hall, Sam H. Hall, Brother Hall that preached at West End, the first preacher they had, Clyde Hale, B.C. Goodpasture, and Thomas D. Rhodes. In 1939, a lot at 405 Roswell Street, now 271 Roswell, was purchased, and the building was begun on April 15, 1940. Now, Brother Hall was responsible for that building being built. Brother Stride, of course, was associated with Brother Hall when he was at West End. He contacted him and asked him to come down and hold a meeting. And Brother Hall came, and as a result, he asked him to try to raise enough money to build a building. So Brother Hall went back to Nashville, and he was able to do that. He was able to build raise enough money to build a frame building there on Roswell Street. And it was purchased, and a building was begun on April 15, 1940. The first worship service was held July 28, 1940, with Brother Charles Ritchie preaching. During 1940 and 41, the West End Church assisted by furnishing preachers, among whom were Virgil and Charles Ritchie. W.S. Stroud and W.B. Golden helped greatly in directing the singing and in any way that was needed in the work. The first full-time preacher was Brother Raspberry, who began work with the Uptown Church in August 1941. He was followed by Barton Davis, 1943-44, W.C. Neal, 45-47, Johnny Boyd, 47-48, Arlen Brogdon, 48-51, Chester Thomas, 51-53, and Roger McKenzie, 1953-60, George M. Yates, 1960-68, C.C. Cal Arquette, October 68 to 1975. All three of those men were Lipscomb with me at the same time, those three men. George Yates, Roger McKenzie, and Cal Arquette, all three of them. October 1975, J. Garvin Smith came to work with him and left in 1980. John B. Tracy came to work in January 1981 until the present. In March 1957, land was purchased on Olive Street. Now, this was on the first frame building that was built. But in March 1957, land was purchased on Olive Street where our present building was erected and first used for worship in August 1959. A three-story educational building was completed in February 1973. And as you know, it's no longer Olive Street, but now it's Piedmont Road. They have relocated. So that was the beginning of that church, which grew into Olive Street, then finally into Piedmont Road. Just a small group meeting there out in the country about 4 miles from Marietta. And Brother Stroud and I got stuck in that mud quite a few times as we went up there on Sunday Street. And to think that all that has taken place in the Lord's Church is a thrilling thing to think about. Then Brother Hale from time to time helped other congregations. He went to Bremen quite a few times to help them out in different situations, and also in Rockmart. And I was told that we preached at Rockmart for about 2 years during my tenure as a gospel preacher. I was told that when Brother Hale went there, they had an organ in the building. He was able to teach them against that and have that organ removed. And I tell you, just the works that Brother Hale did than the church in Atlanta. And of course, I can tell you more about him than I can the others. I had a lot of experience with Brother Goodpasture too. But I had more with Brother Hale because I was right at the right age where I could appreciate him and do work in the Lord's Church. And I can see, maybe I can have time to tell you the instance of how he got me into the work. One night, came up the steps of West End Church there at Northern Hopkins. And Brother Hale was standing there on the platform outside the vestibule. And he said, "Virgil, I want you to preach. I want you to make a talk Wednesday night." Well, I couldn't say anything for about 15 seconds or longer. I said, "Brother Hale, I can't do that." He said, "Yes, you can. Don't you tell me you can't. I'm going to announce it." And he did, so I had to go through with it. And he kept me busy ever since that. For many years, he had me doing things. And I appreciate him for that. Brother Hale came to Riverdale. Let's see, if I have a date on that, 1973, I believe it was, and held a meeting there, and it was one of the best ones we ever had. There were 12 responses to the invitation, 8 of them were baptism. And he would have come back again if he had been able to, because of the schedule and all his health. His health began to fail some too. A brother good pastor held the meetings at Riverdale on a yearly basis for about 8 or 9 years. And he was scheduled to hold another meeting. He'd come along about September, last of September, 1st October. And he was scheduled to hold another meeting when he died. He died in February. And was not, of course, that ended his preaching career. But he and Brother Nichols had an agreement. The first one who died, the other one was the preacher's funeral. And while he was in a meeting there at Riverdale, Brother Nichols died. And Brother Hale, Brother Good Pastor, had to close the meeting one night ahead of time in order to go to and preach at Brother Nichols' funeral. But he was a great soldier of the cross, too. One of the most oratorical preachers I've ever listened to. And rich, he was rich in knowledge. So those two men played a great part in the work of the church and the establishment of other churches and the growth of the church in the Atlanta area. Brother, in 1934, the Church of the Grange was having some problems. I told you that, though. We've already mentioned that. Brother Hale took care of that. And his influence caused the Callaway people to make enough donations for the people to build a building there. I guess that just about covers all the things that I have. Maybe I've left out some things. Somebody else might be able to give some information that I don't have. But I have recalled these things from them as much as I could and talked to a few other people that had some knowledge about this. And incidentally, one reason I know so much about Brother Hale's work, not only being associated with it, but I had to go back in memory and do some research on it, because he told me when he was in a meeting at Riverdale that when he died, he wanted me to preach his funeral. I didn't pay attention to it because I thought he was just saying, just talking. But on June the 25th, 1978, Brother Hale died. And his son-in-law, Jimmy Boyd, is a gospel preacher, too. He married one of Brother Hale's daughters, Rosalind. And he called me and told me, he said, "Brother Hale has it in his notes that he wants you to conduct his funeral." And I said, "Well, I don't know what I can do or not, Jimmy. He's meant so much to me. It involved me so emotionally, I don't know what to do or not." So he said, "Well, think about it. That's what he wants." And said, "You call me back." Well, I got to think about it. I said, "Well, that's what he wants. That's what I do." So I had to do a lot of bringing back things to memory that pertained to his work, because he had said in his notes, the reason he wanted me was because I knew more about his work in Atlanta than anybody else. And Brother Edsel Holman and I conducted his funeral. And Brother Holman was an elder at Ashwood Church in Nashville, where Brother Hale was an elder too. He had retired from preaching at that time. And Brother Holman, I also knew him at Lipton because he was a manager of the bookstore there. And Brother Holman covered all this work there. Now, when I left this part out, well, when Brother Hale left West Bend in 1943, here's what he did for the church. Here how it grew under his leadership and teaching and preaching. When he moved there in 1928 or 27, there were 400 members. When he left, there was 800. And he was one of the greatest personal workers that I've ever known. I remember Brother Stroud, one of the elders there, telling me, he said, "You know, Brother Hale is a marvelous personal worker." I said, "Yeah, I know he is." He said, "He tells me every now and then that we're going to have some baptism Sunday." And it did. It occurred just like he said. He'd been out in the area working with those people, doing that personal work, as we call it. And it paid off. The because it always will. That's how the Jerusalem church took the gospel to the whole world, you know, going out and talking to people, telling them about Jesus. And that's exactly what Brother Hill did. He was a great old soldier of the cross, and he'll be missed, but he will not be forgotten for the great work that he did. He and Brother Good Pastor, Brother Hall, the three main ones who did so much work for West End Church and for the Atlanta area in general, will always be remembered. And we thank God for them. Well, I guess that's about all the time we have. I appreciate you. Yes. Yeah, brother. Because I had that in my notes. Let me see. I think I overlooked that. Yes, another thing, too, that I didn't mention that I want to say before I quit. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. Well, this comes first. Brother Hale had a on WAGA Atlanta at 12:15 in it lasted 10 years. And a lot of people were baptized as a result of that. And I've got here, Brother Cozart, 1935, a tent meeting was held in the northwest section of Atlanta. There were several, 40 West End members from the Northwest Church. Is that date too early? Yeah, let's see now. I have here that 40 members from West End formed the Northwest Church of the ones that were added during the meeting.